This is the second edition of the Pirate Punk Rock Radio Show. What have we got for you this week? Well, it's been an exciting weekend. I've just seen Sex Pistols just play a couple of miles from where I live here in Gypsy Hill. They're playing up there in Crystal Palace. It was marvellous to see them play again. And I guess it was about two-thirds full, 20,000 people maybe. It was a beautiful day. There's about over 7,000 or more people pogoed their hearts out in the heat for like as long as the band played. And we got a few surprises. It started off with the Hawkwind's Silver Machine and threw in a lovely version of Through My Eyes, My Way as well. They didn't do Friggin' in a Riggin'. I thought they could have done that. But it was, yeah, it was great to see. A lot of people came dressed, you know, they were like reliving the memories of their old days. It meant punk, meant and does, still does to a lot of people, really meant something. It's like a major turning point in their life. And that's what this program's, dedicated to, the spirit of that music. You know, whether it's from the 70s or the 60s and the psychedelic and protest music, that's the spirit of punk as far as we're concerned, or as far as I'm concerned. So, the track I want to play, it still sounds absolutely great. The Sex Pistols and God Save the Queen. And that was their uncle. Johnny Toms, he loves us. and he hates us at the same time. If they could get the Sex Pistols together, we could certainly sort the problems out of this country. Or maybe. Well. So we can. So what we got next? We've got a great surprise guest coming up. He's a good friend of mine. He's been down here at Mandala's Studios recording a solo album, I guess. And it ended up with just me and him, 10 days. We wrote the tracks here in the studio, pretty much. We just lived this album for you know, 10 days. 2 tracks a day. He could play drums, lead guitar, sing. I was doing bass, rhythm guitar, percussion, bit of keyboards, programming. And we did it. And it's called, so I don't agree with the title, I don't know what it's all about, Shaved. It's sort of our nod to, you know, our experience of music we were into, similar time in the 60s with the Who and stuff, and Small Faces. And this is the first track from the Shaved album. It's one of the only covers on the album, but it got kick-started the album, really. Got us into the right sort of frame of mind. It's an old Yardbirds B-side with a great lyric, and it's called Mister, You're a Better Man Than I. You're a Better Man Than I, which was written by, I think, Paul Samuel Smith, who was in the Yardbirds at the time they recorded that. Very obscure B-side, but I'm sure you'd agree with me, what a good lyric, and what a good track for us to choose to do on this new album that's just come out. It's called Shaved, and the artist is with us in the studio. It'll be coming up just after the break. So our special guest today on the Pirate of Punk Rock Radio Show is a very interesting character indeed. This child actor, this guy's been a mod, early punk, glam, is a raver, is a rocker, is an author, is a poet, is none other than Daryl Reed. Daryl.
And I'd like to add to that though, I'm very poor also.
So he keeps telling us, but the lifestyle he lives, I do not believe this.
Well, that's all on the account.
Come on, Daryl, it's very rock and roll, man. You're travelling around America, Germany, you're everywhere, man.
Yes.
You've got apartments in Hampstead,
I know,
you're staying in hotels.
System, old boy.
Very good, you can tell me all about that later,
well,
but
I wouldn't.
It's very nice to have you on the show,
it's
mate.
Great to be here.
Welcome back to the Mandala Studios.
It's good to be here with the governor of punk too, you know. You know, that's what it's about. And, you know, it's good to say that people forget where it's really fucking coming from. And, like, you know,
it's got a whole history, doesn't it?
To tell you,
well, this
where
is interesting.
Is
yeah, I'll tell you, because a lot of people think punk just started in 1976, but no way, mate. We go back. Hey, look. Where do we go back to? What's the first band you really got into? The first record you really got into? Go on, tell us about that.
The first record I really got into, okay, well, it all goes back, as I'm sure it does with a lot of people, but I mean, it went back to my generation with The Who for me, because I grew up in the same area as The Who, which was Chiswick, Hammersmith, Shepherd's Bush.
Yeah, not far from
myself. And I'll come up with that. It was The Orange Illusion. I had a band at school, drum school, when Phil Collins was doing his thing, and we were doing The Orange Illusion at Corona Academy. And, you know, I kind of came up with that. And then I met Jesse Hector, who's kind of a mod.
So what year now? Tell us where we're at.
Well, I'm in, okay, I'm in, like, after a lot of stuff, which I won't go into now, but from 68, and I was still kind of pretty rebellious. But
68, well, listen, look, you've chosen some records here, some great records.
Yes.
And the first one you've chosen, actually, is Eddie Cochran. It's Something Else, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, Eddie Cochran was like, you know, that is punk, you know, personified in a sophisticated manner with elegance, you know, what can I tell you? And I know Shari Sheely very well.
Well, look, we haven't got the Eddie Cochran version actually tonight because they're all packed away, but we have got the Sid Vicious version, Sex Pistols, which incidentally shows what a great record it was because this is one of their biggest sellers. So let's hear it for Eddie Cochran, Something Else, sung by Sid Vicious.
Come to man, whack, that's someone else. Africa, man. Whack! It's something else.
So that was the Sex Pistols version of something else.
A very nice
singing there. And incidentally, that was one of their better selling singles. That sold shitloads, man. It did. So that was a good era. We're going back now. We've got Daryl Reid live in the studio. This is a very interesting evening because we just seen the Sex Pistols play just up the hill in Crystal Palace a few days ago.
And they weren't as sexy as I was.
Come on now.
Or could be. You know, I'm still kind of cooking, you know. I mean, yeah, everyone's getting very old. Anyway, carry on, man.
You fancy Johnny Rotten, wouldn't you?
Not really. He's too small.
He fancies you. Oh, come on now. Dear John, look. We're back into, Daryl, you were 11 or so. Okay.
Yeah, 11.
You failed your audition at wherever it was.
I didn't do any other auditions.
Italia Conte? Steve Marriott
I didn't go to Italia. I missed out on the
when
audition.
When you were 6 or so.
Went somewhere else. So
then you went off to boarding school, right?
Yeah.
Bit like prison.
Yeah, prison.
Glad to get out of that. You played the fall and got through?
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Okay, discover you had a bit of talent maybe for acting and making people, entertaining people. And then you had an audition for Corona Academy down in Chiswick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you went there. All sorts of people went there, didn't they? Mitchell, lots of musicians there.
They were all there. Mitch,
Hendrix, drummer.
Mitch was very cool indeed. He was like happening child.
As soon as you got there, you started working. Yeah.
Yeah.
You did loads of gigs, man. Loads of movies. Yeah, I saw loads of it myself. I was going to the cinema to see it, and sat the pictures there. Man. That was great fun.
A teen idol.
Aye. Oh, yes, I remember now, man. Yeah, that you were there, yeah. Famous Five.
Real Rivals, Silence, all those kind of things, you know, which were kind of like...
Yeah, and you turned into a bit of a teen idol when you and your band there, Orange... Illusion, getting on the front cover of Fabulous 208, isn't it?
Well, the Fab 208 came actually out of Dixon and Doc Green, which was, a two-parter, which we did in those times, which was a very famous series, and, it just kind of hit on youth, and they, dug the image and the style, of course, and,
I remember it. You had like a spiky hair, and this is like 1969.
Yes.
Yeah.
They spike it, man, because I thought it was such a drag the other way, you know. So I spiked my hair up, and the beginnings of everything.
Hanging around Portobello Road, mixing with people like Emperor Roscoe. Emperor Roscoe encouraged you to get a band together.
Emperor Roscoe managed our first band, the Crown Angels, after the Orange Illusion. So the Orange Illusion was first with Michael Day Barr from Silverhead, then it was the Crown Angels with Emperor Roscoe managing it, so it was like straight into the scene, you know.
Right, man. And I heard he's jamming with great players like jazz rock players like Graham Bond and stuff.
No, that was before that, because I'd actually jammed at some pad in an evening college deal with Graham Bond out of a dare, basically, of Fraser Hines, who played in Doctor Who, were with me, and they dared me to, and I was like,
this is when John Heisman was drumming.
John Heisman was playing, and Double Kit, and Graham Bond was great because he just said, you know, we had this rat backstage. He said, "Yeah, okay, you're up on the second set." You know, and I didn't really believe it, but it happened. So,
brilliant, man. So, like, we're 1967, aren't we? There was some great music around then. Well, there's some great hits. So, what about the bands like that had good songs that never quite made it? I mean, who have you chosen for us next? Your next records.
Well, I think around that time, I think it was the Beatles, you know, because I was catching up really on the Beatles stuff. So I think it was that kind of like almost semi psychedelic stuff, like Within Without You type of gear.
Well, it wasn't actually. You've chosen this great track by The Herd.
Oh, okay. Well, it was.
Pete, come on.
Yeah, The Herd. The Herd were alright.
I Can Fly is a great track. You played it to me earlier. Well done, mate. The Beatles are coming up later. But anyway, here we go. This is The Herd. Pete Frampton singing, yeah, and a brilliant track. This should have been a hit. I Can Fly. Amazing track there, mate. God, blow, I haven't heard that since my youth. Wouldn't that have been great if it was a hit? It was on the pirate radio, wasn't it? You remember the old Fab 2 8? We used to sit in a Ruse's little old radio, going in and out.
Well,
we loved it. The Doors, we discovered all those bands, early Floyd. So, like, we moved on. 67 was such a good year for psychedelic British pop music. And, well, you know, getting back to your... early days in your career there, your musical career, so you like, you've been jamming with Graham Bond and stuff, and you moved to Tottenham and you was all like playing with these...
Well, no, that happened a little bit after the Crush Butter thing, but I mean, yeah. What came first was Graham Bond and the whole sort of college scene thing. I jammed in with Dare and like he dug it and so forth, and so it spread into the King Floor thing that I grabbed two of those, and then around about mid-1969 was this Crush Butler, which was Jesse Hector with short mod hair, red almost, you know, and his bass player.
Where'd you meet him then?
We met by chance in a rehearsal room in Pimlico, you know, Victoria Way, and I was playing with a kind of band that were doing sort of, you know, like the Nice, you know, keyboards and trio. But these guys...
You're playing drums, right?
I'm playing drums at that point. And these guys came in and said, hey, you know, we'll drum with us. And I said, yeah. So I stayed on from this other rehearsal. And it just happened by chance. And within 2 weeks, we had a Jewish manager who laid all this money into us. And we were starting to do the very big concerts.
So this is before you met the guys with Rocky G, the guy in Traffic and stuff before?
No, I'd actually been playing with them. I've been playing with the guys called the Keith Lott Band in Tottenham.
Right.
Keith Lott was a kind of schlager cabaret singer. Sorry, that's a German word, but he was a kind of cabaret singer. I was working with them, three black guys, you know, who were fantastic, you know, really showed me a lot of syncopation, etc. While I was doing that on drums, one of them was Roscoe G, who went on to go with the Traffic. We had this band, and anyway, then by chance I met Jesse Hetcher in this rehearsal room in Pimlico. And Crush Butler was sort of just happened by itself.
Right, so you're a trio.
We're a trio.
And you're out there playing with pet bands like Osibisa and stuff.
Osibisa
and you're really kicking up the storm.
Mott the Hoople, Slade, who didn't appear because we did.
But you've got like this sort of hardcore in it, because I've seen photos from that era and you look mean, you guys, you know what I mean?
Well, it was.
It was like the Slash t-shirts in 1970.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on building sites and, you know, dust and stuff, the boots and stuff. This is like. Before bands like Gary Elton, you know, before the...
Well, you know, it was like that. We had that. We knew it as well. We knew it was going to
Because you're from Shepherd's Bush, where the Pistols and Stephen Paul were.
Well, Jesse, Jesse was from Kilburn. You know, we'd be, like, in the Kilburn area. Or
That's serious, mate. Kilburn, like,
Kilburn
and Burn, you know. It's like, you know what I mean?
Like, if you come from
Kill and Burn, mate. Yeah. Yeah.
So we were putting it together.
And your music was your way out, sort of thing.
It was the way out, you know.
So, like, we're around 67, 68, 69.
69.
You discovered Protest Me through Dylan and stuff. You chose the next track you've chosen is a great Dylan track. It's actually one of... We loved Dylan, didn't we?
Yeah,
we've done a few covers and stuff, but the track you've chosen is great. Can you remember what it is?
Sooner or Later.
All right. Lovely. Let's go for that one.
But you said you knew me, I believed you did.
Oh, Bob B. What a man, eh?
Yeah, he was very good.
He turned me on. And a lot of people got into protest. And so did you. I mean, like, some of your early lyrics were very punky, really, if you look back to them, you know, what you were doing in 70s, 71.
Well, the Crush Flow stuff with Hector was very, I mean, well, I have to tell you, you know, it was the first, as people were discovering there, but we, you know, the lyrics were ahead. It was about...
Well, to me, it's like Kinks.
Council Escapes.
Yeah. Sing about
Escapes. Council Estates and Factory Grime. You know, the kids that were coming up that were 15.
Like modern day folk songs, Daryl.
Well, like modern day Clockwork Orange from Council Estates, and we knew that was going to happen, and nobody else really saw it.
Because there's a few other bands around at the time you was hanging out with, like the Deviants, Mick Farren.
Well, the Deviants I kind of deviated from, because I thought, well, you know, Mick Farren with his leather jacket, and I thought, well, these cats are cool, but I didn't like the too long a hair at that point. I wanted it a
Edgar
bit.
Broughton, you got into
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Edgar Broughton, Peter Jenner, we begged to manage this, and he knew he did, and then 7 years later, of course, he did Stiff Records. But we went in tune with that. I was into the Edgar Broughton band, yeah, and the Pink Fairies and the Deviants, because I'd sort of hung out with them, and I'd watched them and thought, well, you know, they're doing something there, you know, it's different. And then when I got the opportunity to influence Jesse Hector and Ian Butler with Crush Butler, we wanted a different name, we wanted a different thing, we wanted everything different, and I'd kind of got this James Dean thing in me, but then seeing the Deviants kind of got like the leather jacket thing, and like, you know, we're not going to look like anybody else, and we're not really that nice either, but we like the ladies and we want to be glamorous as well, you know, so it was a combination.
Dig it. I mean, very rock and roll, you got a lot of things to say, you know, one minute you're political, next minute it's sort of sexy glam, it's like you got caught up in the sort of the youth culture, the fashion thing as well.
And we were very young.
And what else was happening at the time?
17, really.
Yeah. And like bands started to come up, like early Bowie, Mark Bowen.
Yeah, well, they were actually...
But hey, we're getting a little ahead of our time. Your next track you've chosen here. What is this track?
What
year are we in? 67 still.
67, well, you know.
No, I mean, 68,
I
don't know.
I'll backtrack a bit because, like, I mean, I always liked the Beatles. You know, they had the mod thing in them as well as the rocker thing. But, I mean, this Within Without You, which was George Harrison, basically.
Sergeant Peppers. Can you remember where you were when you first heard it?
I was digging it in Turnham Green, Chiswick, and I heard it and I thought, wow, you know, I'd grown up with these cats with the short hair, now they were going like psychedelic.
So my early introduction to Eastern
and
new consciousness.
And depth, you know, just like, you know.
All right, let's hear it. Daryl, introduce it. Who
more
is it?
Progressive than what it is now, perhaps. Within Without You. Thank you.
Thank you.
was the Beatles, man, and that was a really great innovative track as far as I'm concerned, and sort of kind of passed into the Syd Barrett thing.
You had to be there, Daryl, didn't you, to appreciate it. When we were growing up,
yeah,
it's like we went from like soul, and there was like a hint of psychedelia, but when the Beatles, you know, this your mum's, your parents' favourite pop band, started sort of going into Eastern music and like new forms of consciousness, we were there, weren't we?
Well, new forms of consciousness and promiscuousness and also
swinging 60s, mate.
You know, freedom. And that's what everyone wanted. And, you know, everyone got there, and it's kind of interesting that...
Everyone?
Well, everyone that was everyone.
That was anyone at the time. No one's going to believe we were there because we can remember it. This is the problem, isn't
it?
Well,
you know, I remember the good things.
67. What a great year. Was there any unemployment?
It started for me around 68, but, you know, it started, I mean, in 66 with all the beat stuff, you know, so it just progressed and everyone... on the scene, you know, that wasn't really part of the other stuff, just kind of fell into this whole area.
The all night clubs like Pantiles and the Middle Earth, man.
Pantiles, Revolution, Pink Speakeasy,
yeah.
You know, Café des Artistes at that point, you know, Brighton. You know, I mean, it was all sort of there.
Strobe lights. Oil slide lights, man. Man, it was cool.
Much.
And the music that went with it, these like 7-minute drum solos,
sex,
like with echo.
Hot, cool groups, explosion of sound.
And who?
And couldn't be beaten.
Who was the Velvet Underground of London at that time, would you say?
I would say that 1969 Crush Butler were, because...
No, 67.
Okay, 67, I would say there wasn't that...
An art school guy from Cambridge, come on.
Well, Syd Barrett.
Someone you've been likened
to. Syd Barrett was more than that. I mean, Syd Barrett was a poet and an innovator of, a very head scene. And... excuse me, people followed that, but basically Remember a Day was a very, well, everything that Syd did seemed to sort of penetrate and influence everybody else who followed on from that, so I think, and he was very influenced by the Beatles.
So this is the next track you've chosen for us, is Pink Floyd. It's not credited. Remember a day.
Okay. Remember a Bay as well.
Hey, it sounds like Syd wrote it. And we'll get into this later, but this is the title of your new movie, full-length feature film, which I've seen.
Remember a Day.
And I'm in it too. It's absolutely brilliant. It's ahead of its time. It's a cult movie. Well done, mate. It's brilliant. I love it. So, in, you know, dedication to Syd Barrett and to your movie, Remember a Day. Here we go. Pink Floyd. remember a day that early Pink Floyd, the Pipers at the Gates of Dawn. I remember seeing Pink Floyd in a Richmond Athletic Clubs, and they were the first band to, well, they used the lights and they had like effects, they put the, held the mic on the drum with reverb and that, and like people were doing a different dance. Art students were like doing the sort of, I think it got called the idiot dance or something like that, but it was like, you know, people
well,
sitting on the floor
with the art, you know, it, to me in those days, I thought it was an idiot.
1 minute it's like, you know, soul bands, Gino and that sort of thing.
And the chicks look great, you know.
And then it's like
the
this,
ladies.
It's more, yeah, it's really, really interesting. Really interesting lyrics.
So
great songs.
If there was any idiots around those times.
So getting back to Syd Barrett, and then your movie, Remember
yeah.
a Day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Syd, isn't it? This is a story
it
about Syd
Vicious. It's based on Syd. You know, you were a part of it. A lot of faces were a part of it. It was very close to what Syd Barrett was about. We put a modern day theme in with like a stalker, which was could have been happening at that point, and it was obviously
Zoot Money.
Now.
Yeah, what
and
a great Zoot actor,
yeah.
Yeah, man, and what
and
a great
we
musician.
In your studio, we made a cult.
But you've got
film.
Some seminal characters in that movie, Darryl. You've got Peter Jenner, Pink Floyd's.
Manager. Syd Barrett's original manager.
Yeah.
We got everyone
got
in that was close.
Jenny
to
Fabian, who was like a close friend, and wrote articles about Syd at the time. You Syd took
Brian White,
Syd.
Who was the aficionado, you know, who came up with the idea of the whole thing, and then we developed a kind of screenplay from that.
Yeah.
Bernard,
I hear, was a hoarder of large tins of baked beans. As it happens, is it true?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Bernard was a hoarder of a lot of stuff at that time.
And
yeah.
I remember while that film was being filmed in this very studio we're sitting in there, a few giant Mars bars went missing, is that true?
A lot of stuff went missing, which he was worried about, and still is.
Okay, well, that's a mystery, we'll get back to that later, but this movie is like, obviously, you know, it's been shown at like film festivals and
yeah, it's coming
rock and roll venues. It's interesting how it gets onto stages that mainstream films don't necessarily get onto.
Well, it's a film that's underground, and it's like everything else I've been involved with, that it takes a while for people to catch on to, and
this is a problem, dear boy, being ahead
well,
of your
yeah,
time,
of
you
course.
Know. You just have to live to a ripe old age and
well,
collect all your royalties.
I think the film Remember a Day should have been out there a while ago. It will take time to come through, and it's already going through the underground.
It's out there.
And, you know, I'm very proud of it, because it broke all the rules anyway about how you do a film, what have you. And so, we came out with a potent
listen, man, it's
story.
A brilliant film. And I understand, there's a rumour going around, your next movie is going to be about the life of Jimi Hendrix, which is the next track you've chosen on the Pirate Punk Radio Show.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, well, I know, that's what you're saying now.
I love Jimi Hendrix, and I love all those kind of the big people, you know, as I call them, because they were. You know, I've met Jimmy, you know, once, and he was a fucking phenomenon. And there is not a lot of people.
Where did you meet him then, though?
Well, I met him on Hyde Park, just around the corner from the Hilton, with a manager that I work with sometimes to this day called Robin Hemingway, who knew him from the old New York scene. And, I mean, you know, I was also at a Beatles session, but that's another story, you know, we kind of got around. But, you know, those kind of people, and I think there's people there, you know, with this kind of spark and fire that are going to come up, and unfortunately they haven't as yet. But I think, you know, some of what we recreated with the film that you were involved with, Remember a Day, with this and that, has kind of, you know, it's still got the fire, and you know, the real fire isn't easy to get to.
So what's that got to do with the next track you've chosen?
Well, it's about fire and being free. It's called Stone Free, and I think it's, Jimi Hendrix at his peak. With a friend of mine, John Mitchell, from the same drama school, you know, so obviously I'm into it.
I want to hear this track.
Yeah,
Jimi Hendrix, Stone Free. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, beyond.
So, I was there, I saw him, and 60 people were in the audience at this little club in Hounslow.
Yeah, you,
I'm
oh,
sure
well,
you saw Mitch, oh man.
Well, Mitch had, was there when we, you know, when we
had to play so hard and loud, because he never used to mic the drums up in those days.
No.
He had to compete with, like, Jimmy and these two Marshalls for Stacks, you know.
Or a Vox, maybe.
But what know, brilliant music, yeah. And the mod thing was happening. I mean, you know, mods were like getting into
mods. That's my terminology.
Because
the mods turned into they became Regency style clothing. The hair grew longer.
But like,
you know,
getting
like
back
Rod
to
Stewart did way afterwards. They were doing then.
Like Gasoline Alley, that early sort of.
Yeah, but they had that then, and you know it was going. I mean, the mods weren't psychedelic. There's no two ways about it.
But going back to
if you look at Clockwork Orange, you don't see geezers with short hair, do you?
But like going back to like Brighton and the sort of, you know, the
well,
the fights on the beaches, the rockers and the mods and that, and the Quadrophenia sort of.
Yeah, well, Quadrophenia isn't right, you know what I saw of the true mods, the top mods and all that stuff. They were there at Margate. I mean, yeah, there was the fights. They weren't really looking out for that. They were going there. That kind of became subsidiary in the 60s.
The press stirred it up, didn't they?
You know, all that stuff. And
I mean, mods like Eddie Cochran as well as Hendrix, and, you know.
Yeah, you know, as the Beatles said, you know, Ringo Starr said he was a mocker. Well, you know, I mean, you kind of, okay, I grew up as a mod, but I kind of went into the rock thing, so you became a mocker, you know, you didn't become anything else.
78, though, got a bit glammy.
But the psychedelic mods, which everyone forgets, that
grew your hair.
Grew the hair.
Granddad t-shirts, hide and die.
The jackets on, like, the straight trousers, like, looking cool. You know?
Yeah, I tell you, I was at a hoogie.
It's all done before the faces, you know.
Darryl, I was at a hoogie in Southall Town Hall, man, and there was these couple of guys, and we was all in our zoot suits, you know, the two-tone mohair, trying to look like peacocks. So there's these two guys, they must have just come back from India or something, because they had, like, beads on, like, you know, waistcoats, their hair was all bleached, long hair. And everyone was looking, these guys are cool, they had, like, moccasins, you know, we had all the Ivy Brogues and that sort of thing. And these guys was like, yeah, man, and it's the birth of the hippies, you know. We had to tie and dye our own t-shirts.
Those mods, that's what was beautiful. They became this other thing, but retained the style and attitude. And that's what nobody's ever actually looked into. And that's actually what, you know, came out of the Beatles and Small Faces and all those kind of people, and the Who, you know, with like a consume for miles. But it became that thing. People forget that, and there's a missing area.
I see. Now I know what your next movie is going to be. Modradelia, is it, or something?
No, it won't be any. It will be entirely different, with echoes of the real thing, you know, that I've experienced.
But like, something like, let's get into the glam area there. So, like, you got went down to where'd you get your black silk strides from?
Well, it was black silk strides, right? There used to be a cat off Connolly Street called Colin Wilde, who made stuff for like the Who, the Amen Corn, all these like mod sort of bands, and everyone would go to him that knew where he was. And so I had a pair of black satin trousers made up hipsters with the belt loops, you know, I forget how many, you know, but like business that would get a belt in there, and also tailor made with the crease cut in and stitched, so you had a crease in there and it was black. So they lasted me for years. I mean, like, we did that with crushed butter as well, and they weren't flares, they were straight, so you could wear them with boots and heels, you know.
So you've been a fashion victim for a long time. I mean, you know,
I don't think anybody else was bothering, because had to know who he was and where to go. In
you had to look cool, man. The Stones were doing it when they Jagger and that.
And the other people weren't. You know, they were kind of getting the old.
But like bands like Cockney Rebel, they had a bit of style, didn't they? They were around at a similar time.
Cockney Rebel looked great. They looked like clowns when I saw them, and I thought, well, this guy's got real good lyrics. Well, and you knew.
In fact, Gary Oldham.
Yeah,
he's a mate, wasn't he?
Gary, we saw them at Heavy Metal Kids much later after what we did, but I mean, they kind of had an essence of what we wanted to do. And Gary was a great friend towards the end of his death. I was hanging out with him a lot, but I mean, you know, I saw them in the early days.
So what's this Rock's Follies thing you did at the time?
The Rock Follies was the first punk band on television after the Pistols, because the Pistols had just done the thing, but we'd actually got this show with Rock Follies. And long story short, we were doing a punk thing, Captain Zero. You know, I smashed a drum kit up, and it was a real thing.
This is after Crush Butler?
Yeah, it was a long time after Crush Butler.
Before Hammersmith Gorillaz?
Yeah. No, it was around about the same time.
Right.
But I mean, the Crush Butler had done it all in 1969 and 70.
Right. Yeah. And you remember seeing the Clash down at the Rainbow?
I went with Generation X to see the Clash. I'd actually met Mick Jones, 3 years before in Maida Vale with long hair and all that. Give me my guitar back, all that sort of stuff way back, you know, when he was doing the London SS and things, you know. So I kept seeing him around, actually, well, a few times. I don't like the Clash when the Clash came out. I mean, the Pistols were what I liked, because, you know, they were what I was doing with Crush Butler, but also more, you know, they had, I mean, the man had, Johnny Lydon had lyrics that were cool, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's a fascinating story. That's really sort of given a bit of an insight to the build-up, to the punk thing, you know, like... It was happening, various things were happening there, and like the energy was flowing. These were the sort of bands, maybe the Sex Pistols would be coming to see you, and that inspired them. And, you know, some great music as well. Thanks for that. So, what's the last track you've chosen for us then?
Well, I've chosen the Sex Pistols, and...
a wise choice, I might
have. Yes, but patient. I've chosen the track...
The Berlin Wall thing, isn't it? I don't want a holiday.
Yeah, I mean, I always used to mention it as I want to go under the Berlin Wall, but because I play there so much, but I'm in Berlin, but I think, what is it called? You know.
Yeah, it's called Holidays in the Sun. Daryl, thanks, mate. We'll get you back. Good luck to you all. We're going to play some more of your tracks later.
Said Anarchy in the UK, but I wouldn't. But
no, because we played that last show, so. Holidays in the Sun. Here we go. Sex Pistols.
I'm going to play them.
time, I guess, for about one more track, as I promised you. Another track. I played you the first track of Daryl, I guess, Daryl Reed, his new solo album, Shaved. And now I'm going to play you the last track. And it features Daryl on the drums, lead vocals, lead guitar. Features me on guitar and bass, backing vocals, some keyboards, and I can't remember what else. There must be some hand claps in there somewhere. It's a track that was written here in the very studios recording now in about 10 minutes, I guess. We were on a roll. This is the last track of this album. We've done 10 tracks in 10 days. And this is track number 10 on this album. It's called The Man Will Know Us When We Get There.
Spirit song.